Let us start our convocation with a prayer. Would you please all stand? Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Friend, beloved God,
Jesus Christ, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Mahavata Babaji, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Teswaji, our Guru, Paramahansa Yogananda Ji, saints of all religions, we bow to you all. Beloved God, bless our convocation. Help us to open our hearts and minds, that we may be receptive to these sacred teachings and to thy love and the love of the great ones. Unite us all in divine friendship. Unite us with thee. Om. Peace. Amen. Please be seated. Our first subject is creating a spiritual environment. When I was in India, I thought, why is it that this country has such a high spiritual vibration? And I do not mean just particularly holy places, temples, or pilgrimage places, but overall. Because certainly I've seen people there that were not particularly spiritual. And yet that country has an overall aura of peace, of spirituality. And I thought it couldn't have been just because there have been saints from a long, long time, again and again, through the centuries. It couldn't have been just because they are holy places. Because in the West, there are certain countries where they had saints. And in the West, they are holy places, such as Fatima or Lourdes or Assisi or Mount Washington and Lake Shrine and Encinitas and so on, and the Biltmore Hotel during the convocation. Only during convocation. Because every time when devotees come here, when we come together, the hotel people tell us, this place is turned into a temple of God. When convocation is over, when the devotees are gone, it's just a hotel. And I thought, why is it then that, generally speaking, the vibration of the country or Western countries do not have that spiritual vibration as India? And you know why I was thinking why it is? Because there is a constant suggestion, there is a constant remembrance or reminders in India of God and the great saints. Constant, everywhere. In the little stalls, in the markets, in the bazaars and so on, where most people do their shopping. Every little stall has pictures of Krishna or Divine Mother or Shiva or whatever. Every truck, and there are millions of trucks throughout India, and every truck on the front up above has a picture of Krishna or Shiva or Divine Mother or just a big sign of Om. Many of the towns of the villages have spiritual names. Some of them have been distorted, for instance, by the British. But for instance, Serampore, where Sriok Teswati's ashram was, that used to be Sri Rampur, meaning a city dedicated to Rama, the great prophet, the great avatar of ancient India. Calcutta used to be Kali Ghat, meaning a place dedicated to Kali, the Divine Mother. Most of the people have spiritual names. And that is the most amazing thing. Many of the commercial companies, many of the commercial products have spiritual names. And so there's a constant reminder, constant suggestion. God, God, God. When anybody goes shopping, or when anybody talks to a person or thinks about a person who has a spiritual name, subconsciously he is repeating the name of God. And here they have made experiments in movie theaters. For instance, they flashed just during, while the film was still running, just before intermission, they flashed advertisement, pictures of ice cream and popcorn and all the other junk that you can buy in intermission. Flashed those things on the screen while the film was running, and those pictures were flashed, such a short moment that the eyes, the conscious mind, could not perceive them. And yet they have found that when they did that, there was a vast increase of sale of popcorn and all the other junk. Subconscious suggestion, that powerful. At least they are consistent, and then it is chunk on the screen and chunk in the stomach, isn't it? Now, if that has such an effect, can you imagine when there is constantly in India constant reminder, constant suggestion, not just subconsciously, but conscious. God, 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 all over the place. Now, what can we do about that? Obviously, we cannot have all those pictures in the businesses and markets and trucks and all that sort of thing. But what does it mean? We have to learn to create a spiritual environment in our own minds, in our own hearts. Constant suggestion, constant reminder of God. Now, we have a whole class on that subject. I don't want to go into that. I just would like to say this. Make it a rule or a discipline to live in the present. Now. And the present, if we are only in outer consciousness, without bringing God into our consciousness, that present is empty, no matter how much people are seeking diversions. And it is because of this that most people are not living in the present. They are escaping into the past or into the future. I remember some years ago when I gave a class series in Miami, there was a night watchman at the hotel where we were staying and had the series. And that man, I have never seen a face more gloomy than that. At first I thought, the first time I saw him, I thought maybe he's just in a bad mood, but it went so on, night after night. And finally, my companion went up to him to talk to him, hoping that he could cheer him up. And he came back to me and he said, "You know who that man is? He was a multimillionaire in Cuba. And just when Castro took over, he just barely managed to escape to America with his family, and he had to leave all his money behind. And now all he thinks about is the money he had lost." I said, "But this is several dozen, quite a few years ago." He said, "That's right. Years and years and years." I said, "Did you suggest to him to practice the presence of God? He would have a wonderful time. He has nothing to do. Nothing ever happens there. He just stands there. he could practice the presence of God and he gets paid for it. He said, I tried to, he thought I was crazy. That man, I think he's still there, thinking about the past. Total waste of life. An old friend of mine, some time ago, wrote me. He had heard about certain predictions about what is going to happen in the future and different sources. He wrote it all out and he sent it to me and he asked, what do you think about these things? And he was in poor health and I thought, I somehow had a feeling, I said, it is much better now to fill the mind with thought of God and not thinking about the future and not worrying about the future. After he had received my letter, he sent me another one. He had heard about different kinds of predictions from different sources. He asked, what do you think about these? 2 weeks later, he died. You know, total waste of life. I'll give you a quotation by Master. I think you all know when I say Master, I mean Paramahansa Yogananda, the Guru. You can so easily kill time. Whole life can be wasted. You are the master of the moments of your life. Use them wisely so that they will give you your salvation. We are the masters of the moments of our life. If we are escaping into the past or into the future, we are not living. We're only existing. Now, that's the only thing we have that we can be creatively using in a constructive way. Only now. Past is gone. Future will be taken care of if we are making the most out of now, this moment. But of course, you know, the outer environment is also important because I think you have seen in or heard in Master's writings, environment is stronger than willpower. And I give you a quotation by the Guru. We become like the people we mingle with, not through their conversation, but through the silent magnetic vibration which goes out of their bodies. When we come in the range of their magnetism, we become like them. That is how this law works. Or we are influenced by the vibrations that people have left in a certain place. And that's only part of it. Each one of us has certain karmic tendencies, results of our past actions, past thoughts, in this life or particularly in previous incarnations. And it is the outer environment to a great extent which determines which of those tendencies become dynamic, become active. Now, we all have done wrong in the past, obviously, and we all have good karma. Otherwise, none of us would be here in Master's teachings. Now, it is the outer environment which stimulates, which brings out, which makes active a certain group of tendencies within. In a spiritual environment, the spiritual tendencies become alive, manifest. Material environment, the material tendencies become active. And this is, I think this is so very little known. I want to give you, this is from Dear Abby. There was a woman who was very concerned to send because her daughter wanted to go to a college in a different state. And that mother heard that in that college there is no supervision, there is no discipline, and so she was very concerned and wrote to Dear Abby. And Dear Abby, you know what Dear Abby said? Discipline there or lack of it is not important. Rules of ethics and morals were established before in the home. And I say, sorry, Dear Abby, you're wrong. She did not take into consideration these laws, you know, of magnetism. These laws are not known. In this age, in this yoga, electricity and so on, these forces are known. They do not know yet the source of electricity and these forces. That comes, that will be fully known only in the next stage, in the Trita Yuga. And the source of magnetism is the cosmic vibration of Om. So it is very important that we understand that the Master said environment and the company you keep are of paramount importance. The specific outer environment of early life is especially important in stimulating or stifling the inner instinctive environment or tendencies of a child. But it's not just children. However, he says, there is no period in life when environment and good company are not important. So we have to, you know, we have to understand how those laws work. Most people do not know, and we for a long time have ignored and did not know those subtle laws. And that is why the evolution overall takes such a long, long time. Because as long as we are not, do not know, are not conscious of those laws, and if we are not operating them to our advantage, we are nothing but puppets. Puppets of environment, puppets of karma. No free will whatsoever. And once we understand these laws, knowing how they work and applying them consciously, then we can make them operate for our benefit. I remember one time when we were building India Hall in Hollywood. We were just a few of us, and we didn't know how to build. And so then they hired a contractor. His name was Andy. He was a good man, but he was a very worldly man. And so being there every day in the sacred vibrations that Chinguru had left, gradually he changed. As we saw that, he, once in a while, some one of us would quietly chant one of Master's chants during work. And after a few weeks, suddenly we saw him, observed him, that he was whistling our chants. He didn't know the words yet, but the melody, he had absorbed it. And Pimalananda, particularly, I remember, and I, we were looking at each other, and we said, he's catching on, he doesn't know it yet. And so after a while, Master came to look at the progress of the building, and then when he had seen it all, he took us together, and we stood there, and he stood next to Andy and was holding his hand and telling us stories. No philosophy. No yoga, no religion, just telling stories. And then he left, he went back to Mount Washington. Then Andy took me aside and he said, do you know what he was talking about? I said, well, he was telling stories, it was nice, wasn't it? He said, yeah, you don't know, with those stories, he told me the story of my whole life. And he said, and all the mistakes I ever made. And then he said, but in spite of the fact that he knows everything about me, he was so loving, he was so kind. And then he said, now I begin to understand. You know, he said, I want to become a member. So he became a member. That's how gradually, you know, first gradually softening up until he was ready, and then the master came and pulled him in. That's what magnetism does for you. Now, if you understand how the principle works, what does it mean? Those of you who have the opportunity to be near a temple, to go to a temple services and meditations, or a meditation group or a center, do so. It is not necessarily that you get new knowledge. It is the law of magnetism which will help you a great deal. I want to read to you from a letter that the master wrote to Rajarshi Janakananda. As you know, Rajarshi Janakananda was the great, master used to say, he was the greatest of his disciples. He was a businessman, and as much as he could, he came to California to be with us. But in Kansas City, where he had his office, he regularly had a little meditation group. He met with some of the devotees. And this is what the master wrote to him. I am very glad to hear that old and new members are showing interest in SRF and that you are helping them. What made me most happy is to know that you feel the inspiration in the meetings. Think of it. That you feel the inspiration of the meetings. And he, at that time already, he was able to go into samadhi. And yet that great man, that great saint said, I found inspirations in these meetings. Why? The master said, goes on in his letter, united minds are bigger channels through which God's power flows in a mightier way to individual souls. And then he said, I well remember Sri Yukteswar's first warning after I took Kriya from him. Go and get companions who will act as your soul's bodyguard. Think of it. An avatar telling an avatar. Now, obviously, Master didn't need any bodyguards. But they were so great, so humble. Master was so humble that he said these things in order they are teaching through example. And then he says, they will help you to churn the butter of self-realization from the milk of your mind. And then he says how true Guru's warning was, because all those who spiritually advanced in Kriya but who stayed away from our group which I started later succumbed to worldly influences and to the promptings of their subconscious material tendencies of past incarnations. Then he says a sort of spiritual indifference sometimes creeps on the soul, just like the quick spread of clouds over a clear sky. We have to banish the clouds with the sunshine of good company. Now you know that we all have periods when we are not very enthusiastic about spiritual efforts. These are karmic tendencies from a past. Then it is good company, meeting with other devotees, which help us, which reinforce us, reinforce our spiritual inclinations. So, remember this. And you do not have to rely only on that, on that group effort. In particular, there are some devotees who are alone, that do not have any group or center or temple nearby. You can always change the inner environment. The master used to say, if the outer environment is not conducive for spiritual practice, you can change the inner environment. You can always think of God and bring the masters into your consciousness. Remember, it is what we choose. We have freedom to choose what we are thinking about. This is different than the ordinary person who just lives and is driven and being influenced, exposed by external environment. You once understand how the principle works, you can apply it. You can consciously think of God and the presence of the great ones. God's consciousness is all-pervading, omnipresent. Do you understand what that means? There are no holes in God's consciousness. God is not like a Swiss cheese which has holes in it. God is omnipresent. And whenever you want to be in that presence, you can do so. Not only that. One time somebody asked the master, "Sir, is there a scientific method apart from Kriya Yoga that will lead a devotee to God?" And the master said, "Yes, the true and swift way to the infinite is to keep one's attention at the Christ center between the eyebrows." Why? If you are standing outside in the sunlight, you feel sunlight is all-pervading, isn't it? If you take a magnifying glass, that magnifying glass collects sun rays into one-to-one point in that concentrated force of that beam is strong enough to burn paper and wood. And so likewise, even though God's consciousness is all-pervading, you have a concentrated beam of that presence right here in your Christ center. Don't think, I often have told you, I think, don't think that this is just a point or just a center. This is a concentrated beam of God's consciousness right here. And in this entire world, there is no place holier than your Christ center right there. Think of it. Make a mental note of that. There is no place holier in this whole world than your Christ center. Because here you have the golden ring, which is the cosmic vibration. You have the blue field, which is the universal Christ consciousness, and the little star, which is cosmic consciousness. You have the triune aspects of God in a concentrated way right there. And never mind whether you see it or not. If you're concentrating here, you are in that presence. And due to the law of magnetism, you are purified and you are changed. Now, for some time, the Christ Center may not be very personal. It becomes very personal after some time. Then you can do something else besides that. In the autobiography of a yogi, one of the great disciples of Lari Masha said about the master was a living temple of God, whose secret doors were open to all disciples through devotion. Think of it. And so it is with our guru, as he used to say, "To those that think me near, I will be near." And Dayamata used to say that he is as close to you as you permit him to be. As close as you permit him to be. And I give you a quotation by Guru. "Great saints don't waste their time meaning on those that are indifferent. You have to convince them of the urgency of your heart, and then they will be attracted to you, and you can steal magnetism from them." Or you could say the blessings, the spiritual consciousness. But you can also feel their magnetism thousands of miles away because their spiritual vibrations are limitless. Now, you have read the story of Dayama when she went to India and when she went to Babaji's cave, and how she was in that train station, how she quietly was inwardly calling on Babaji in with deep devotion, ever deeper devotion, and how Babaji came to her. You know, this time I was there, and I thought that train station is right next to the cave. Far away. I don't know exactly. It seemed to me about 50 or 60 miles away. So it is not the cave. It's her devotion which brought it. And so then at that time, you're reading it in her book, Only Love, Babaji said to her, tell the devotees they don't have to come here to find me. Whoever goes within with deep devotion, calling and believing in me, will find my response. And then Dayamata said, this is his message to you all, how true it is. If you only believe, if you only have devotion and silently call on Babaji, you will feel his response. And so it is, not only with Babaji, so it is with Lari Masha and Sri Yukteswarji and our Guru Paramahansa Yogananda. The Master said to receive magnetism from spiritual people, and he meant the Guru, really. He was so humble, he didn't always say, but that's what he meant. You should feel that they are with you as you meditate and pray. That thought brings their magnetism to you immediately. And you can put their presence instead of magnetism immediately. And so, you know, you may not be able to work in a spiritual environment. It doesn't matter. I remember one time when I had to run some errands downtown, and I was hours in that material environment, and when I came back and came into the presence of Master, in a moment my consciousness was lifted, and that the intensity of that spiritual company offset hours of being in material environment. So you have to understand, there is a time element and there is an element of intensity. Now, when you understand these things, I want to give you a couple illustrations. In India, sometimes they have, I think I've told you that before, they have religious festivals when they have for instance, when they had, I was there when they had the pujas for Divine Mother in the aspect of Saraswati. And in Calcutta, they had tens of thousands of Saraswatis, the images. They make the most beautiful images out of clay, and they paint them, and absolute, each one is a masterpiece. And driving through Calcutta, you'll find in every block there is Divine Mother standing there, decorated with lights and flowers and so on, and the devotees are coming. This is not idol worship. They have ceremony to invoke the presence of the Divine Mother to manifest through that image, and then the devotees go and give their devotion to the Divine Mother. And then afterwards they go and immerse the image in the river so that the Divine Mother is released from the little form and can go back into omnipresence. Isn't that nice? Now, when I was on a lecture tour through India in one city, and I was staying with another monk in the home of some members of family, they had just a tiny little meditation room. And they asked me to go in there and meditate. And I did, and I tell you, that was such a powerful vibration in that little room. And when I came out, I could hardly talk. And I said, this little meditation room, it is just as powerful as the most holy of the temples in India. And the lady of the house said, but you know, that presence isn't always there. You invoked it. And I said, no, I didn't invoke nothing. And I believe I said it in correct English. And I said, I don't even know the ceremony to invoke. And they all laughed. And I said, you don't need a ceremony. Your devotion is enough. You know what I want to say with this? I want to read again what the Master said. You should feel that they are with you as you meditate and pray. And that thought brings their magnetism to you immediately, immediately. Now, before I said God's consciousness is all-pervading, but you have a concentrated force of that consciousness right here in your crest center. Same thing with the Guru. Same thing. The Guru's consciousness is all-pervading. But there was a concentrated force of his spiritual power in his personal aura. The light, the spiritual power which he radiated. Now you say, but he isn't here anymore. You want me to read that again? You should feel that they are with you as you meditate and pray, and that thought brings their magnetism to you immediately. When you sit in your meditation, and you sit in front of the picture of the Guru, why do we have the pictures? It is so that we can focus our minds and our hearts. And if the Guru's consciousness is all-pervading, then he is also in the picture. This is not idol worship. And when you sit like that, feel as the Master said. Feel. That he is right there with you. And feel just as we were when we came into his presence, when he was here physically. And going into his presence, it was just like we being unfolded or embraced by his spiritual vibration, by his aura, by his light, his love. And we were changed. You can have exactly that same experience now, anytime you want to. Just feel, as Babaji said, with deep devotion, calling and believing. It takes first a little imagination, but it is not only imagination. I know. I wouldn't tell you. And faith in devotion. And you sit there and you are, it is just like you feel so, it is so comforting and you feel so secure. You don't want to have anything else anymore. You are there and you are surrounded by the aura, by the light and the love of the Guru. It's a most tremendous experience. And then ask him to help you when you practice the techniques. And he will. And with the techniques, you are withdrawing the energy in your consciousness inside, and you feel your inner temple is filled with God. And outside, you are surrounded by the light of the Master. What more do you want? You do not feel anymore such a great need for all kinds of diversions, because diversions are only in order to fill the emptiness of our lives. And I tell you, it will grow on you. More and more, you want to be in that presence. And heart is satisfied. No more questions. No more questions. I want to read to you from the autobiography just a few passages. And the master said, my whole body responded with a liberating glow whenever I knelt in the Indian fashion before my guru. Even when Lari Masha was silent, master told me, or when he conversed on other than strictly religious topics, I discovered that nonetheless he had transmitted to me ineffable knowledge. Sri Yukteswar affected me similarly. If I entered a hermitage in a worried or indifferent frame of mind, my attitude imperceptibly changed. A healing calm descended at the mere sight of my guru. Each day with him was a new experience in joy, peace, and wisdom. Quietly, sitting beside him, I would feel his bounty pouring peacefully over my being. Read that autobiography once in a while. Read these words. And don't read them so that you're just reading what happened to the master and the param gurus. You, these words are given to you, to all of us, as a personal guidance, as a personal instruction to follow. This is a practical book. It's not a novel. We should apply these words. You, these beautiful words, you cannot exhaust them. They're alive. They're alive. That book is alive. The more I read it, the more it becomes alive, the more I get out of it. Spiritual inspiration, spiritual knowledge, spiritual instruction. Read it again and again. And these beautiful words, quietly sitting beside him, I would feel his bounty pouring peacefully over my being. What beautiful words. And they are for each one of us. Make it your own. And when you're sitting in your meditation, you're sitting in front of the picture of the Guru, feel. You are sitting beside him, in front of him, and feel that he is there. And feel that his spiritual vibration, his light and his love is unfolding, is embracing you. It's a real experience. I say again, it takes a little imagination. It takes belief, means faith, and devotion. It's as simple as that. Try it. Try it. And you will see, it will change your meditations. You want to be in that presence. You want to be. That is how you can create spiritual environment anytime you want to. All right.